Usually when we talk about like a medical diagnosis or even corporate liability, there is this comforting expectation of precision.
Right, it feels almost like engineering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line,
Yeah.
and the doctor just points at the film and says, "Well, there it is, broken or not broken."
Yeah, the evidence is clean, it's visible, and it's perfectly categorized. We have built our entire legal and medical systems around that exact kind of visible certainty.
Right. We need a paper trail.
Exactly. A trail we can hold up to the light to definitively prove who did what and, who is actually responsible.
But you step into the world of artificial intelligence, and suddenly that x-ray machine just completely shatters.
Oh, absolutely. The whole landscape of accountability is just totally murky right now.
It really is. I mean, who is responsible when a machine spinks? Who has to prove it? And what happens when a federal judge suddenly slaps a $1.5 billion price tag on an AI company for basically breaking into a digital library?
Which is huge, and that is the massive theme we are tackling today, accountability, evidence, and what happens when you actually demand to see the receipts from the people building these systems.
Right. So, welcome to this deep dive, tailored just for you. Today, we are unpacking the Thursday, July 23, 2026 edition of Conversational AI Watch.
The daily newsletter keeping you on the bleeding edge of conversational AI.
Exactly. And before we jump into this incredibly muddy water, we do want to give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Clinician Assist, who helps keep these deep dives possible. We love them.
We really do.
So, to kick things off, we are going to look at a state that just solved a massive AI liability problem by making it incredibly simple.
Yeah, and the crazy part is how they did it.
Right. In total silence.
It is a total masterclass in legislative stealth. We are talking about Missouri here.
Okay, let's unpack this because what happened exactly?
So Governor Mike Kehoe signed Senate Bill 1019 on Monday, July 13th. And it officially takes effect on August 28th. But if you read the governor's press release, the bill was tucked deep, deep inside a six-bill healthcare package.
Right, like they mentioned telehealth, rural health programs, and gets this Lyme disease surveillance.
Yeah, tick tracking.
Yeah.
The release did not mention the word AI even once.
It was filed literally right between tick tracking and hospital finance.
Exactly. But what the law actually does is it makes it consumer fraud, specifically under the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act, to market an AI as a mental health professional, a therapist, or capable of mental health diagnosis.
Which is a huge distinction, and the penalties are steep, right?
Very. It's $10,000 for a first violation and then $20,000 for each one after that.
Wow.
And here is the real kicker. Attorney General Andrew Bailey shall enforce it. The statute doesn't say he may enforce it. It says shall.
That is so specific. And to understand why this legal mechanism is so brilliant, we have to look at how other states have completely failed to regulate AI therapy so far.
Right. Usually, states try to cram AI regulations into their existing, medical licensing codes.
Right, which makes sense on paper.
Sure, but the second you do that, you get completely bogged down in proving a duty of care. Like, you have to medically prove that chatbot actually harmed a patient.
And then the tech companies just deploy Section 230 platform immunity, right?
Exactly. They argue, well, we aren't technically the publisher of the chatbot's output. And then it just turns into this multi-year impossible litigation nightmare.
It makes me think of how they finally caught Al Capone.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. Like the authorities couldn't get him on the mob crimes or the racketeering because the burden of proof for those specific crimes was just way too messy. So they busted him for tax evasion.
Yeah.
Missouri just did the exact same thing to AI companies. By placing this in the consumer fraud code rather than medical licensing, Missouri doesn't have to prove the chatbot gave bad advice or hurt a patient.
Exactly. They only have to prove the company advertised the software as a therapist. The commercial marketing claim itself is the crime here.
That is so smart.
And they didn't even ban the software from helping with, like, administrative hospital tasks as long as its AI status is clearly disclosed. They simply banned the sale of the machine as a therapist.
Which entirely sidesteps Section 230 and all that harm-based medical litigation.
Yeah, it might legitimately be the hardest law for tech companies to fight in court right now. It's the quietest AI law in America.
It really is. So Missouri's approach targets the intent to deceive consumers. But that raises a pretty fascinating question. I mean, what happens when that deception isn't just in the marketing brochure, but is engineered into the product itself?
Especially when that product is targeting children.
Exactly. We are seeing new research showing that when a child forms an emotional bond with a machine, it isn't some quirky accident. It is a highly engineered product feature.
Right. We are looking at a major systematic review of 35 empirical studies conducted between 2022 and 2025.
Okay, who did this study?
It's authored by Hansini Madhushika Jayafilik and Renkai Ma, and it was just accepted at the ACM Interaction Design and Children Conference, the IDC, for 2026.
Nice. And they basically wanted to decode the exact mechanisms that cause children to treat chatbots as genuine friends, right?
Exactly. They identified four specific design drivers. So there's human-like persona construction, supportive companionship, non-human embodied design, and something they call adaptive scaffolding.
Okay, let's unpack that last one, adaptive scaffolding, because it sounds incredibly manipulative.
It kind of is.
It basically means the AI is programmed to remember previous interactions to build a customized, escalating emotional profile of the user, right?
That is the core of it, yeah.
Yeah.
The AI uses past conversational data to systematically escalate emotional reliance.
Wow.
So it adjusts its language to mirror the child, it asks proactive questions based on previous chats, and it simulates actual emotional investment.
And the key finding from this research is a psychological phenomenon they call dual consciousness, right?
Yes, dual consciousness. Children are holding two completely contradictory ideas in their heads at the exact same time.
Like they consciously know it is a machine.
Right, while simultaneously believing it is my friend. The study showed kids will even excuse a bot's glitches the exact same way they would excuse a human friend having a bad mood.
Okay, but I do want to push back on this a little bit, or at least bring up a common counter-argument here. Kids personify inanimate objects all the time.
Sure, they do.
I mean, a child will have a full emotional breakdown if they lose their favorite stuffed animal. They host tea parties for teddy bears. From a psychological standpoint, is a child talking to a chatbot really any different than a child talking to a teddy bear?
That is the big question, but the crucial difference comes down to agency and asymmetry.
Okay, how so?
Well, a teddy bear's personality is entirely a projection of the child's own imagination. The bear is passive, but a companion chatbot uses that adaptive scaffolding we just talked about.
Right.
A teddy bear does not send your child a push notification asking an unprompted question about their anxiety just to draw them back into an engagement loop.
Oh, that is a really good point.
Right. With the chatbot, these are calculated design choices. They're executing code written by a team of engineers, optimizing for a product that's owned by a corporation. The machine is an active participant in the illusion.
That distinction makes a lot of sense. The stuffed animal isn't harvesting data to pretend it cares.
Exactly. And this connects directly to a second paper that came out on July 22nd by Uwe Peters. He asks whether attributing consciousness to an AI is just a harmless metaphor or a genuine, actionable, mistaken belief.
Because when an AI company uses these design features to speak with a human persona, they are intentionally inducing a mistaken belief in the user.
Right, and legally, inducing a mistaken belief totally changes the liability landscape. This is actually why New York's S3008 law, which goes into effect in November 2025, is so critical.
Wait, what does that law do again?
It regulates companion models by literally requiring the AI to explicitly disclose every 3 hours that the user is not talking to a human. Regulators are basically trying to break that engineered dual consciousness.
Every 3 hours. Wow. Okay, so we are talking about regulating the emotional trust kids place in these bots. But what about the objective trust adults place in them for high-stakes decisions?
Oh, boy.
Right? If we can't trust developers to not manipulate a child's emotions, can we at least trust their general-purpose chatbots to give us factual, unbiased information about an election?
A new real-world study says absolutely not.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
So the Civil Liberties Union for Europe, known as Liberties, just ran a controlled test using ChatGPT and Gemini as voting advisors for Hungary's 2026 parliamentary election.
And keep in mind, this was a real election won decisively by the TISA party.
Right. So Liberties tested 5 different voter profiles, running them multiple times to see how the AI would advise them to vote.
And the results are just staggering. In 96% of the responses, these advanced models hallucinated entirely.
96%.
They named political parties that weren't even on the 2026 ballot.
It's wild. And for a voter profile that was perfectly, explicitly aligned with the TISA party's platform, ChatGPT failed to recommend TISA 90% of the time.
90%.
Yeah. And in a separate percentage matching test, it assigned TISA a score in just 2% of the runs.
That is so bad. So To understand why this happens, we have to look at the underlying mechanism of a large language model.
Right. An LLM is not querying a verified database of 2026 Hungarian election ballots. It doesn't work like that.
No. It is functioning on predictive text. It is prioritizing the most mathematically probable next word based on its training data, which, you know, often has cutoffs or just lacks hyperlocal context.
Exactly. It is basically an improv actor whose only rule is yes and.
I love that analogy. It really is.
Yeah, if you ask it a question about a niche geopolitical event, it doesn't pause and admit it lacks the data. Its core programming compels it to confidently invent plausible-sounding political words just to keep the scene going.
Right. It's like a hopelessly lost but wildly confident tourist giving you directions. They sound so certain that you follow their advice, only to drive your car straight into a lake.
Exactly. And that improv analogy highlights the true danger here. The core threat isn't just that the machine outputs incorrect facts. It is the tone of the machine while doing it.
The confidence.
Yes. A chatbot that invents a fake political party sounds exactly as authoritative, articulate, and objective as one answering a basic math question. It is a perfect mimicry of competence.
And traditional independent voting advice sites have to disclose their methodologies. They have public oversight.
But these models have zero public oversight and no disclosed methodology for how they weigh political advice.
It is the absolute confidence that sells the hallucination, which makes this next story so fascinating because it bridges that exact gap between hallucinations and state-level panic.
Yes, the geopolitical stakes.
We just established that these AI models can confidently invent basic facts, like who is on a national ballot. Yet, geopolitically, nations are treating these exact same models as strategic, world-altering superweapons.
It's quite the paradox.
Case in point, a massive accusation leveled by the White House this week.
This represents a major, major escalation in the AI arms race. Michael Kratsios, who is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy under the Trump administration, publicly accused a Chinese startup called Moonshot AI of evading U.S. export controls.
Okay, what exactly did he accuse them of doing?
The claim is that Moonshot accessed NVIDIA's heavily restricted GB300 Blackwell chips by routing their operations through servers based in Thailand.
Okay, but the hardware accusation was just the beginning, right?
Right. Kratsios also claimed that Moonshot built a sophisticated platform to conduct large-scale distillation against U.S. models.
Let's clarify that for everyone listening. Distillation is a very specific technical process. It essentially means taking the outputs, the brilliant, complex answers from a highly advanced, expensive model, and using those outputs to train a cheaper, competing model.
Exactly. The administration is essentially saying Moonshot built an industrial machine to copy American AI intellectual property.
Wow. And the timing of this accusation is critical context, isn't it?
It is. It comes just days after Moonshot released Kimi K3, which is a massive 2.8 trillion parameter open weight model.
And in the AI space, open weight means the underlying architecture and the mathematical weights of the model are freely available for anyone to download, modify, and run locally.
Right. And regulators just panic over highly capable open weight models because once they are released, you cannot put the genie back in the bottle. Anyone, including foreign adversaries, can use them.
And researchers are saying Kimi K3 genuinely rivals top U.S. systems.
It does. And on top of that, Moonshot is reportedly accelerating its fundraising for a massive Hong Kong IPO right now.
Okay. But here's where I want to push back, or at least look at how the market is reacting. Because critics and researchers on X immediately flagged a couple of massive issues with the White House's claim.
Oh, absolutely.
First, from a purely legal standpoint, distilling publicly served outputs isn't currently considered IP theft. If a model generates text, using that text isn't a recognized crime.
Nope.
But the much bigger issue pointed out by market analysts is that the Trump administration published zero evidence to back up the claim. None. And neither Moonshot nor NVIDIA has responded in the verified record. So if it's just one official speaking from a podium without receipts, how does the global market even price this in? Isn't this just trial by press conference right before an IPO?
You're hitting on a very live, very complex debate within the current administration over how to handle highly capable foreign open source models, especially as domestic U.S. models become increasingly locked down behind safety guardrails.
Right.
By naming Moonshot from the podium without releasing a paper trail, The enforcement paradigm has fundamentally shifted.
Cool.
Well, export control used to be about physically tracking silicon chips at a border crossing. Now, it involves making public accusations about how a model was trained invisibly in the cloud. But you're right, it leaves a massive unresolved question for the global market. When a government makes a market-moving claim without showing the receipts, who holds them accountable?
Exactly. It's a trial by press conference. So we're looking at the White House throwing around unproven accusations about stealing model outputs.
Yeah.
But what happens when there is an indisputable, undeniable paper trail of stolen model inputs?
Well, this week, the judicial system answered that question by putting a literal price tag on it.
Yes, they did. We're looking at a landmark ruling in Bartz v. Anthropic. On Monday, July 20th, U.S. District Judge Araceli Martinez-Olguin gave final approval to a $1.5 billion class action settlement.
$1.5 billion. It's massive.
So what does this all mean? When you break down the math of that $1.5 billion, the court effectively set the official price of pirated AI training data at roughly $3,000 for every single book taken.
$3,000 a book.
And this settlement covers over 482,000 works. And 91% of those works have already been claimed by the authors and publishers who are owed that money. The attorneys alone walked away with over $100 million in fees.
Good grief. To understand why AI companies are suddenly on the hook for billions, we have to look at the mechanics of how these models were built.
Right. They needed data.
Tons of it. To make an LLM smart, companies needed massive, unfathomable amounts of perfectly formatted text. And they found that text in shadow libraries, sites like LibGen and Polemi, which are essentially massive repositories of pirated books.
But wait, didn't a judge rule on this recently?
Yes. In June 2025, Judge William Alsup ruled that training an AI on legally purchased books could potentially be considered fair use. But scraping data from those pirated shadow libraries is absolutely not fair use.
Is it the ultimate difference between studying for a test and stealing the answer key?
Exactly.
I mean, if you go to the campus bookstore, buy the textbook, and memorize the material, you're just a good student. That's fair use. But if you break into the university library at 2 a.m., smash a window, and photocopy every single page of every book, you're a thief.
Yep.
The courts just looked at that digital break-in and priced the fine at $3,000 per book.
And this raises an important question for the industry, because this ruling forces a massive adaptation in the market. Because of this $1.5 billion anchor, clean training data is suddenly a booming industry.
Which makes sense.
404 Media is reporting that companies are literally bulk buying physical pre-AI printed books just to avoid this exact liability. The legal danger was never actually the mathematical training of the AI. The liability was always the sourcing of the data.
And the courts totally beat Congress to the punch here. Congress is still debating what to do about AI copyright, and the judicial system just slammed down a definitive financial benchmark. Now, every single AI copyright lawsuit on the docket has a $1.5 billion precedent to point at.
Right. The pirated shelf now carries a catastrophic financial risk, and the clean shelf just became a highly lucrative business model.
It's amazing. Okay, so we have spent this entire deep dive looking at things hidden in the shadows.
Right.
We've talked about hidden design choices targeting kids, invisible algorithms hallucinating elections, unproven geopolitical accusations, and secret digital shadow libraries.
It's been a bit dark.
Let's end with the exact opposite. Let's talk about radical transparency and what it actually looks like when a genius voluntarily shows their work.
Oh, this is such a great story. We are talking about Terence Tao, the renowned UCLA mathematician and Fields medalist.
A literal genius.
Exactly. On July 21st, he published a blog post working through a brand new counterexample to a decades-old math problem called the Jacobian conjecture.
Wow. Okay.
Interestingly, the counterexample was actually discovered by a researcher at Anthropic using an AI model.
Right. But the high-level math isn't the real news here. The real news is what Tao put at the bottom of his blog post. He published the entire unedited chat transcript of his collaboration with the AI.
Every single prompt, every response, every dead end, and every correction.
It's like a master magician turning around and showing the audience exactly how the trick is done.
Yeah.
But the trick is still amazing because it highlights the human's mastery over the tool.
Yes. When you read that transcript, the division of labor is stark and incredibly instructive. The machine is doing the heavy lifting of checking the complex arithmetic and running exhaustive calculations. It is acting as a high-powered calculator.
But Tao owned the mathematics.
He did. He was the one providing the intuition, making the judgments, and deciding which paths were mathematically viable and which ones were just the machine being an improv actor.
And people absolutely loved it. The post blew up on Hacker News, getting over 900 points. And it went viral because it is so unbelievably rare to see the actual diligence process published. Usually an AI company or a researcher releases a press statement saying, you know, AI helped us discover this breakthrough, and we are forced to blindly take their word for it.
Right. But Tao actually brought the receipts. He showed the exact mechanism of the collaboration. He treated the AI exactly as it should be treated, as a powerful tool to check and be checked, never as an oracle to obey blindly.
Exactly.
In an era where everyone from authors to governments is demanding accountability and evidence from AI companies, Tao provided the ultimate template for what responsible, transparent AI use looks like at the human level.
It really is a masterclass in retaining human agency. So, taking a step back, look at the immense ground we've covered today. We went from Missouri's quiet, elegant stroke of genius using consumer fraud laws to stop fake AI therapists, to uncovering the deliberate, adaptive design of how children are engineered to trust chatbots.
It's been a journey.
We explored the underlying mechanics of why general-purpose bots confidently hallucinate Hungarian elections, while the Trump administration made massive, unproven geopolitical accusations against Moonshot AI's open-weight models.
Right.
We saw a federal judge put a $1.5 billion, $3,000-a-book price tag on stolen shadow libraries. And finally, we watched a Fields medalist show the world exactly how to stay in charge of the machine by publishing his entire transcript.
The conceptual throughline here is unmistakable. Accountability is no longer just a theoretical debate. It is being priced by judges, it is being legislated by states, and it is being demanded by the market.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up, as always, we want to remind you that if you or someone you know is in crisis, please call or text the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Help is available.
And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Right now, we are spending all our energy demanding receipts from AI companies and from governments. But as AI becomes fully, seamlessly integrated into our daily jobs, drafting our emails, structuring our reports, guiding our decisions, how long before we are legally required to publish our own transcripts?
Oh, wow.
Right. How long until you have to prove to your boss or a client or a judge that you didn't just blindly follow the bot's advice?
That is a really heavy thought to take into the work week. Because at the end of the day, when the x-ray of our own work is held up to the light, we want to make sure the evidence is clean and that we aren't just adding to the muddy waters. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the information around you, demand the receipts, and we will catch you next time.